The Guardian.
Hello all, James Richardson here, and before we get started with today's edition of Football Weekly, I'm going to point you in the direction of our sponsor Squarespace. For more about building beautiful websites, go to squarespace.com. And now, on with the show. Football Weekly Extra as the Premier League gets another round in. And it's trebles for all. Arsenal, Man U, Liverpool and Newcastle. But whose glasses are full and whose are empty? Elsewhere, Wenger says, I'm Bayern. Is Van Gaal now on his last orders? And bottoms up as Aston Villa crawl out from under the table with a thing called a win where you outscore your opponents. Full story on the way. Plus saucy continental talk and the latest from Lake Zurich in this Football Weekly Extra. Yeah, AC Jimbo back, everyone. Listeners, hello, everyone. Back from my exciting times at the FIFA Ballon d'Or. Quite a thrill to be sat with three of the biggest names in football. And on Monday, I was with Cristiano Ronaldo, Messi and Neymar. Because, you see, yeah. Anyway, Barry Glendening.
Hello.
James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
Greg Bukowski.
Hi, James.
Just back from snowbound Anfield.
I'm going to snowbound Anfield on Sunday.
Oh, right. You weren't there.
I wasn't there last night because I'm going on Sunday. Oh. Yeah, it'd be a bit too
was anyone
much.
There last night?
Fans, lots of fans.
All right. Yeah, they were. It was a fully charged atmosphere. Anyway, all right. Well, so far we've established a couple of things. One, that there was a game at Anfield last night. Two, there was lots of snow. Three, you didn't go to it. But anyway, it was a very exciting midweek round of matches. 34 goals, I counted. I think that's right. Were you thrilled, Barry?
Yeah, I've saw two of the best games of the season. I think we've had this midweek, starting with Newcastle and Manchester United, who served up a 3-3 thriller on Tuesday, and then Liverpool and Arsenal followed suit at Anfield on Wednesday.
They
and
certainly
both
did.
Absolute brilliant games.
They certainly did. What did you watched the Liverpool Arsenal game? Did you, Greg?
I watched both games. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with
splendid
Liverpool
entertainment.
We?
Well, I thought last night's game was extraordinary, really, for this stage of the season. Because you get to this stage of the season, you think they're going to be perhaps, you know, a lot of fatigue, players looking a bit listless, and also Klopp made a big deal beforehand of saying that he thought Arsenal would dominate possession and Liverpool wouldn't be enforcing themselves on the game and be more of a counter-attacking team, and it didn't work out that way at all. Liverpool started on the front foot for 20 minutes, were really, really good going forwards. Firmino actually turned up in his Liverpool career. Felt like for the first time.
What do you make of Firmino? When he turns up, he's quite extraordinary.
Yeah, and
the issue with him or with the team the rest of the time?
Well, I think Klopp's going to have to find the right balance of team, the right balance in his team to make the most of Firmino. So far, when Benteke's played, Firmino hasn't done much, but when Firmino's played as a kind of fake nine, he's been impressive. He played like he did against Chelsea, I thought, yesterday. His movement was really good. He was drawing Koscielny and Mertesacker out of their penalty area and allowing space in behind for Ibe and Lallana to run into. And he scored. Yeah, he scored two good goals. I mean, his second one was fantastic. Mm. I was impressed with Liverpool yesterday and going forward, but the same old problems at the back. Whenever there's a ball flung into the box, the defenders act like it's a unpinned grenade and scatter here and there. Somehow managed to almost score, almost concede another goal directly from a corner. And Ojeru got the slightest of touches, but it looked, very similar in that there's a corner comes in. Everybody, let's get out of the way and let's just see it on into that goal there. So they've still got issues for Klopp to sort out at the back. He's trying to do that by signing Stephen Colker on loan and playing him up front.
Well, yeah, but many would say that's the best place to play Stephen Colker. Huh?
Well, I thought it was great. I thought he was showing that he loves a bit of narrative. Who's the former Spurs player on the bench? Let's get him on. That was interesting. And he looks like he's going to be signing Joel Matip from Schalke, who Liverpool are going to get on a free transfer to try and shore things up at the back, which he desperately needs to do. I think a bit of credit to Arsenal for yesterday's performance. Well, a lot of credit to Arsenal because they showed tremendous character to come back into the game twice, albeit through a little bit of sloppy defending on Liverpool's side. And although they'll be feeling like perhaps they lost the game because of the way, the nature of the way that Joe Allen scored late on, I still think a draw away at Anfield against a Liverpool team that was playing, you know, very well going forward is not a bad result.
Yeah, lots of positives for Arsenal. Joe Campbell playing in a new role, and Giroud.
I thought Campbell's ball for Giroud's goal was brilliant. I think we saw that against Olympiacos, just the way he can, you know, bring the ball down in a tight space, turn, play a reverse pass, and he can thread the needle as well. Because I don't think we saw much in the way of decisiveness from Ozil last night. But Giroud, again, 9 in his last 9 games, 11 in the league. And I thought he took both of his goals really, really well. The touch and the finish for his second was brilliant. So, I think Arsenal did show a lot of character last night to come back and get themselves in front. I think there might be some regret because I think at one stage last night they were 4 points clear, when they were in the lead, and obviously Leicester were being held by Spurs. So in that sense, there's some regret. But, still... You know, still very much believe in Arsenal as a title contender.
That's nice. And they have some people arriving, or at least one person, Elneny, who may be the first of many.
Yeah. I think he's the player that they've been missing, the midfield player who can come in and cover for the injuries that they've had there, gets through a lot of running, very durable. It's actually nice to see Arsenal go out and get a player that they need. I mean, they did that in the summer with Cech, but didn't bring anyone else in, and I think probably Elneny will be the only person they bring in this week as well.
Yeah. I thought he read the game really well for Bale against Liverpool last season when I saw him. He's really intelligent and kind of nips in and takes possession away in the same way that Conte does for Leicester, that kind of player.
Mm. All right. Leicester, who remain tied with Arsenal, level with them on points. Anyway, Arsenal this weekend go to Stoke, which is a bit of a classic Premier League fixture, isn't it? Railway stations and that. Stoke all the way up in seventh place after their fine victory over Norwich. While Liverpool will be taking on, Greg, Man United, with you present for that.
Yeah, very excited about that game. Maybe you wouldn't have been so excited 7-10 days ago when neither team was scoring particularly many goals. I think this game, it'd be intriguing to see how Van Gaal sets United up to come to Liverpool, because although they drew a game 3-3, they'll be feeling very disappointed, whereas Liverpool will be feeling like they won their 3-3 draw, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
And I think Van Gaal really questioned the balance in the United side, saying, okay, we've got going forwards as we would like to, but we can, you know, we've let things go at the back. But United will be playing the Liverpool side with a defence that isn't particularly strong, and I don't see any reason why he can't set the team up in the same way. I thought Lingard made a difference for United in that, just by playing him. Mm. But he's been injured the last few games. Just by playing him, he had a pace on the left, he had pace in Martial on the right. That gave two options for United's midfielders to play in balls behind Newcastle's defence into the corners and allowed them to go forward more freely. I think the last game Lingard played or started was
November, I think.
Well, no, it was the defeat away at Wolfsburg 3-2 although they got beat, that was the last time many United fans would probably say that looked like a United performance in the way they went about the game and tried to attack it.
Okay. Well, Liverpool's defence, you talked about them. Man United's defence just conceded 3 goals against Newcastle, including that stunner from Dummett right at the end. Barry, you called this one of the games of the season, the 3-3 on Tuesday night.
Yeah, it was, well, the best game I'd seen at the time, and possibly surpassed by Liverpool-Arsenal. I think maybe that one just edged it, but, you know, sort of very little in it. But there was some very peculiar refereeing in that game, which sort of started a trend which continued throughout the fixtures with some weird decisions. I thought Marouane Fellaini could have been sent off. I'm absolutely mystified as to how the penalty was given.
The Rooney one?
When Chris Smalling was wrestling with Aleksandar Mitrovic.
Really? You didn't see that as a penalty?
Well, I just really puzzled as to how the referee, it was Mike Dean, I think, was able to tell who the aggressor was, because they both seemed to be sort of grappling with each other.
You could see Mitrovic's shirt sticking out, though, and Smalling's hands on it, and you could see Mike Dean's view of it, and that's what he'll have seen. Maybe he didn't see the precursor to that. But
that's possible. And then the header when Marouane Fellaini headed the ball at Chancellor Mbemba's arm, that's obviously been a big talking point as well. And then in later games, the referee who did Sunderland's Swansea seems to have had just an absolute shocker.
Yeah,
he was only a young lad, but I think it was only his fourth or fifth Premier League game. But it might be his last for a while, I suspect.
It might well be. All right, well, it certainly wasn't a boring match this time for Newcastle. And it really does look like Wayne Rooney might be back into something like form.
Yeah, he's scored in three consecutive games now. And I think, although a couple of those goals are penalties...
The ball for the second goal, I think it was. It was the for Lingard's goal.
The reverse pass he played. Yeah, and great awareness from Rooney.
But also the speed that he showed to actually get onto that ball ahead of the defender.
Yeah, because I think there've been occasions. I think was it against Palace earlier this season at Selhurst Park when I think Martial played a ball through to him and you could just see he didn't have the legs to get on the end of it, and you just thought that's Rooney gone. But no, he's definitely been brighter of late, and I thought it was quite interesting what Rio Ferdinand Scholes was saying on BT before the game. In that we've seen kind of United begin to take the handbrake off a little bit, and you just wonder whether that's the players actually taking matters into their own hands, going a little bit rogue in saying, "Okay, we
taking matters what into their own hands."
Well, not Juan Mata, but...
Juan Mata, who scored twice in this fixture last season, producer Ben is keen for us to... that was the fate that was completely overshadowed, of course, by Stephen Gerrard's brilliant but also brief cameo. The candle that burns twice.
That was one
bright.
Of the best performances under Van Gaal United have given, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Speaking of Van Gaal, Barry and Greg, you both came in to do the rumour mill this morning. Who won?
Well, Barry a fine won. Win. I don't think there were any winners.
All right.
No,
but apart from the readers, in your output therein, what was it? Was there anything on Van Gaal? Because there have been some media sources, some news sources that are claiming that this weekend's game away at Anfield is in some way once again decisive for Van Gaal's permanence on the Man United bench. He's got this, and then home to Saints, and he's got, of course, bad blood with Ronald Koeman. Then he's home to Stoke. Ooh, Mark Hughes there, former United hero. And then he's got his old chum Hiddink again away to Chelsea. So it's a tough run of games. But as I say, some are saying that we're once again in that, one game to save his job scenario. I thought we'd move past that.
Yeah, I don't know if there's as much in that as the press are saying. I didn't read so many rumours about Van Gaal's future today. I don't know, you look at United's league position, a win and they could be back into the Champions League places. I mean, that's how tight it is at the top, I suppose. But it would seem an odd time now, given that you've gone past the beginning of January and we seem to be, this is the start of the running, essentially. And that's when you start to see, teams picking up again. It would seem an odd time to make a managerial change at this moment.
Okay.
Wasn't it around Easter that David Moyes got fired?
That sounds right. I think it was when mathematically they couldn't finish
fourth. That was when it was all over, essentially. Right.
Okay. The other fixture in that run that I haven't mentioned, but you might have done on Monday, was the FA Cup draw where they'll be away, I believe, at the County Ground against high-flying Derby, second in the Championship. So all very exciting. Hey, one thing I should mention, and this is another producer, Ben Statt, his lineup for the clash with Liverpool, if he picks Fellaini or not. United average 0.9 points per game with Fellaini, and without him, 2.4. If they basically not played Fellaini in any of the games this season,
played with 10 men.
Well, gone with another lineup. Then, according to those figures, you know where they would be right now?
No, Jimbo.
8 points clear
at the top of the table.
Of Arsenal on top of the table.
Oh, wow.
Without wanting to sound like a gegenpress nerd and making myself sound like a gegenpress nerd, I'm guessing Klopp targets certain players before matches, perhaps to harry off the ball. Because I saw yesterday Jordan Henderson, who wasn't, maybe supposed to be playing so high up the pitch, saw Mertesacker get a sniff of the ball and absolutely legged it towards him and, try and hurry him out of possession. And I'm guessing you could, in advance of games, you could look at certain players who you think, aren't so smooth on the ball or a little bit slower to get the feet moving.
Who are you earmarking?
And risk, well, Fellaini, for one. You know, and therefore try and limit the risk of just going, you know, aimlessly towards every player in the last third and leave yourself exposed at the back. Or perhaps saying, when he's on the ball, he's on the ball, he's on the ball, that's when you go at them.
Right.
You know, so maybe you won't see Liverpool pressing somebody such as Daley Blind, because he's actually quite good at you know, finding a pass out from the back, and perhaps other players will come under.
It's demoralising, that, isn't it? When you are in possession with the ball, or, you know, in my former case, the puck, and you notice that as soon as you get it, defenders cease to even bother giving you any kind of space or respect.
You
just come and take it.
Are you having some memories of playground humiliation here?
Yeah. Anyway.
I think Mesut Ozil never really got to settle on the ball during Arsenal's game against Liverpool, and I think that really knocked him out of his stride altogether. Yeah.
Mm. Right. Well, lots more to talk about, and we certainly will be doing just that after this. Well, that was certainly different. Hey, Newcastle fans. We haven't given you much love yet for your extraordinary comeback. So let's do that, Barry, now, as we look forward to Steve McClaren's side's upcoming fixture with West Ham. West Ham, who are, looks a lordy, barely 1 point off the Champions League positions, in fifth place.
Unbeaten in nine, I think, and won their last four in a row.
Wow.
Now, Steve McClaren's been handed some good news.
Oh, yeah.
Andy Carroll has succumbed to knack once again. I think slight hamstring strain. So Slaven Bilic said he'll be out for a short time.
Right.
So he won't be around to terrorise the defenders of his former club, which is good news for them, and probably good news for him as well, because it's a club he supports. But
he's not the player they have to worry about, with all due respect, is he? Dimitri Payet, the man who lit up.
Well,
their
West Ham have plenty
of
good attacking players, you know. I've said before on the pod, Newcastle have this habit of sitting deep, their central midfielders defending way too deep. I presume on instructions, that it's not just their natural inclination to do that. But they've now signed Jonjo Shelvey from Swansea, and it'll be interesting to see how Steve McClaren uses him. I would imagine he'll come straight into the team. And a fully firing Jonjo Shelvey is a good footballer, you
know? That's true. Also, there's Henri Seve out of Bordeaux.
Yeah, but I think they also are looking for another striker, because Mitrovic, although he scored against United, their first penalty, I think, in over a year, has drawn some criticism for wasting chances.
Right.
And Papi Cisse, I think, is out for a month, 6 weeks. I think he's having a groin operation in Paris. So they're looking to bring in some goals, because it was obviously quite bad, even though they had, it was quite a spirited performance from Newcastle, and they got a point that perhaps say they weren't expecting against United. It wasn't a good night for them, with Villa winning, Sunderland winning.
Indeed. They have dropped down to 19th place now, although they're only a point from safety. Dimitri Payet making his first start in West Ham's game down at Bournemouth, his first start since November. That is, not his first start ever.
But when he came on for West Ham, you know, when he came back from injury, he did look as if he was going to slot straight back in to his olds.
As indeed he had at the start of the season when he first arrived. Now, it was remarkable how in that first game against Arsenal, he just immediately looked like he was there to boss things.
That free kick.
That free kick.
That was one of the best free kicks I've seen all season anywhere.
Really?
I mean, the arc on that ball. I mean, you could, the way the camera was set up, you could look over his shoulder. And I don't think any goalkeeper could say that, because it looks like it's going over and it just dips and it kisses the bottom of the bar. Brilliant.
Right. Hammers have taken some big scalps on their travels this season. Liverpool, Arsenal, City, Palace and Bournemouth as well. Is Newcastle going to be another one in their collection, Barry?
I don't know.
All right, then.
If you're asking me to call it, I mean, if I'm right in thinking, West Ham have also been beaten by some fairly mediocre teams on the road as well.
Oh, have they? On the road?
They take the big scalps, and then so this looks like a game they could conceivably lose.
They haven't actually lost a game. You were talking about this before. Their unbeaten run goes back to November. And over the last six games, you know, the famous form table, only Arsenal picked up more more points.
Newcastle's issue seems to be motivation as well. Like they tend to turn it on, or they have done this season against some of the better teams, and then, you know, when there's slight expectations about them, they then switch off again. So McLaren's got to sort that out.
Right. Tilly, who doesn't seem to have a problem with motivation, Leicester.
No.
Level on points with Arsenal again. What a header from Robert Huth.
It was beauty.
The Huth is on fire. Yep.
This seems to have been a game that could have gone either way. But it, if I was a Spurs fan, I'd be slightly concerned that it seemed to have the habit of even though they played well against Leicester, they still lost the game. And that's a concern because they... I'm not sure they have the backbone to mount a serious title challenge, you know. I might be being a bit hard on them because, you know, sometimes you can play well and just lose, but they seem to have a habit of sort of conceding late goals that cost them dearly.
A quality that one might even describe as Spursiness.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
And their failure to capitalise on, you know, Manchester City, Manchester United, Arsenal all dropping points... You know, it just seems typically Spursy as well.
Right. Well.
But, you know, they're still well in contention. Yeah.
But Leicester, eh? Three clean sheets in a row. That's a lot of pizza they'll be eating.
Yeah.
And that's there's 5 hours they haven't conceded in the league.
I think they've conceded once in the last four league games.
Wow.
And yeah, so the Leicester we saw at the beginning of the season when they were conceding goals and scoring more than other teams has changed for 2016 into this miserly team with Huth and Wes Morgan at the back performing very well indeed. I think Wes Morgan is now, you can add Harry Kane to Diego Costa and Sergio Aguero as high calibre forwards that he's kept in his pocket in games. That bodes well for Leicester. If the goals dry up going forward, then they can, you know, it seems, stop conceding them at the back and give themselves a good chance. And they must fancy the chances now, seriously, of finishing in the Champions League. I know Ranieri's trying to, you know, talk down any talk of them exceeding all their expectations. But they've done so well, and they play Villa in the next match.
Yeah. Well, they're 8 points clear currently of West Ham, who are the team in fifth.
Yeah.
As you say, Villa next.
They've got Villa next, and they must win that game because I think after Villa, they face Stoke, Liverpool, Man City and Arsenal, which
it's
is a very
tough
difficult
game, though, Greg. Yeah. It's a tough game. Villa on the back of
This one game winning run, right, which they have Wayne Hennessy to
100% in their last one game. And also it's a derby, so, you know, form book out the window and that.
Yeah.
No, here's a Villa fan, Nason, who says, we've ended our 157-day winless run. Can we still qualify for Europe?
I'm sure they could.
I'm sure mathematically they can, yeah, in this league.
I see
that Claudio Ranieri has actually set Leicester a target of 79 points.
Oh.
For the season now.
So the 40-point, done now, that, and
done
now
that.
It's
now
straight to 79.
Now the target is 79. And that would have won them the title in 1996, I think.
Is the basis for that they get the same performance they had in the first half of the season plus 1 point?
You know, yes, because
one better.
That would be a sign of improvement.
One better.
But like I say, that would have won them the title.
Wow.
On at least one occasion.
Well, they're level on the top, so it's not crazy talk, Barry.
No, I genuinely thought they'd get beaten by Tottenham Hotspur and was very surprised when I saw that scoreline.
Wow.
Hats off to them. I mean, there just seems to be so much affection for Leicester and in general, and Claudio Ranieri in particular out there, and everyone's sort of rooting for them, and yeah, we can dream. It would be great.
Absolutely. Speaking of you dreaming, Barry, Sunderland, what a huge win for them. 4-2 down at the Liberty.
Yeah, I think...
Against Swansea.
It's a great win for them. It's the second time they've beaten fellow relegation strugglers in a row. They were helped immensely by the ineptitude of the referee, who was a last-minute replacement for...
Andre Mariner,
who was
although
poorly...
He did spread the favours around. For example, he gave Swansea a fairly imaginative penalty.
They did have to play for an hour with 10 men, though, which wasn't helpful.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Right. OK, but anyway, here's Mikel Jongsma pointing out that Diego Costa, Sergio Aguero, Wayne Rooney and Graziano Pelle are all Premier League strikers with fewer goals than Jermaine Defoe this season.
Yeah. hint of offside about all three of his goals against Swansea, but they were all given, pretty marginal calls. So, but he's playing really well, and again, it's a surprise because I thought his best days were behind him.
Yeah, when he signed on, I think we mocked Sunderland for splashing out so much cash on this.
Well,
this
he is trousering an awful lot of money. Right. So, but. He is aging, but he keeps himself very fit. I don't think he's a drinker. I think he's completely teetotal, so he's not a party boy particularly. And you know, if you're down among the dead men, but you've got a striker who's scoring goals, that's going to help you immensely.
That's so very true. Here's another truism of football: players do well against their former clubs, and. Former club klaxon for Jermaine Defoe as he prepares to face Spurs this weekend. Spurs, is that home or away, Barry?
Away.
At Spurs.
Oh, it's at Spurs, right, okay.
Yeah.
White Hart Lane, Tottenham against Sunderland. What do you think?
I think Spurs would probably be too good for them. Sunderland, they're showing plenty of stomach for yet another relegation fight. I'm just not sure they have enough quality. But... We'll see.
Allardyce has got them watching Derren Brown videos.
Is that right?
This? Yeah. Yeah, he's a big fan of Derren Brown.
Derren Brown, for those of you who don't know, is James.
The Illusionist.
Yeah, he's one of those kind of mind...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he'd been really impressed by Derren Brown's latest exploit, which was to persuade a member of the audience to push someone off the edge of a building?
Push someone to the death, basically.
Yes.
Can he make somebody do that?
Right. So, he's an unusual illusionist in that his shtick is that he will do a trick, but rather than assume the cover of a magician, he will basically then deconstruct it for you to an extent and say, no, it was all because I'm messing with your mind.
Yeah. So I don't know what inspiration Allardyce was taking from that latest trick.
Ooh.
But apparently, it's all about, you know, the power of suggestion, the selection of the words you use.
Mm.
He thinks Derren Brown will be a great manager.
Well, he said he was going to take his squad away on a sunny, warm climate.
Maybe he was
break.
Using the suggestive power of words on them at that point.
So he just got a story published in The Guardian saying that was going to happen. Yeah. They all believed it was going to happen. It never happened, but they thought it had happened.
Brilliant.
And therefore they felt refreshed and rejuvenated and went and spanked Swansea 4-2. He's a master.
Wow. Mm. Words, eh? As F.R. David, you know, knew so many years ago. They don't come easy, but they have huge power.
Did we ever actually preview Stoke versus Arsenal in amongst that bit at the beginning? I don't know if we did, because I was just going to say Shaqiri's out for that one.
Oh,
well, Hughes says he thinks Shaqiri's going to be out. And I was thinking, that could be a blessing in disguise for Stoke. That it gives Stoke the opportunity to bring in a physical player and make that game seem a bit like the game that used to frighten Arsenal to bits in years gone by.
Right.
So you might see John Walters or Peter Crouch perhaps coming into the team and it being a bit of a throwback to a Stoke Arsenal game.
Shaqiri should go see that healer in the mountains that Mancini sent him to. The one where he was saying it was just bewildering, his treatment at Inter, that, you know, he had this knock, and, you know, at Stoke he's got six physios, all of which are really on everything that happens to the players. And, you know, instead, when he was at Inter, you think, yeah, this powerhouse, when he had a knock, Mancini sent him to see this really weird old guy.
Right. Is this some sort of faith healer at all?
I don't think so. He's just like, Shaqiri just described him as this old man.
Right.
I don't think it was like a Hangerland kind of attach some cheese to this kind of thing.
Right.
But
was there any kind of power when he laid his hands on Shaqiri?
Well, obviously not. He was just, very disappointed.
And Chini's quite a one for, you know, he will go on his knees in pilgrimage and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, to Bosnia. And,
Interesting. Arsenal have a terrible record, of course, at the Britannia, and you think that might continue by the sound of it?
Well, I just think it might bode in Stoke's favour, because when things have been expected of them this season, they kind of haven't done it, and when they've been the underdogs, they have put in some of the best performances, and I know Shaqiri's been part of that, but I just think against Arsenal, it could be, you know, a good thing for them to have perhaps a little bit more of a physical presence up front, along with some of their other, you know, very good ball players. And that could be a thing that Arsenal weren't expecting going into this match.
Yeah, very interesting. All right, Spurs taking on Sunderland, that gets a big tick. Hey, big fixture, listeners, that we haven't talked about yet, and you're probably thinking, oh, I wish they'd get onto Chelsea-Everton. Let's do that now. This just in... Producer Ben went to the European premiere of Creed.
Lucky producer Ben.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know who took him? Paolo Bandini.
All right.
Yeah, the two of them went. And producer Ben, who's a big connoisseur of Rocky films, says that he loved this one. He felt that it lived up to the legacy while also taking it into the future, breathing new life into the whole franchise. Mm. I must admit, I'm looking forward to seeing it myself. But the reason that I mention all of this is that apparently the big finale, without any spoilers in that, but the big finale takes place in front of 100,000 screaming fans at Goodison Park, which suggests it must have been a very cosy day at Goodison that day. Stallone, of course, is a chum of Bill Kenwright's, isn't he? He's been to various...
Well, he has been to various Everton games, yes.
And he complained about the coffee.
He's been a few times, and he's been out on the pitch, and they've all chanted his name and stuff. Yeah, he's whatever the link-up is with that 9% US investors, I think. I think that's to do with that. On the subject of Creed, that having not seen the film...
I haven't seen
I don't know if producer Ben can say, are there, like, training montages where they have all kinds of odd things that they have to do? Because I go boxing usually once a week over the road.
With Sean Ingle?
No, he doesn't go anymore.
Really?
And
Is there a montage of you, Greg?
No, but yeah. We did this thing the other day. It was the first one back after Christmas where he put a tractor tyre in the middle of the ring.
Yeah.
And we had to just put our front foot in the tractor tyre and face up to your opponent who put their front foot in the tractor tyre. You weren't allowed to move. And then you just had to non-stop head spar for 3 minutes on end. And one of the, you know, the handy things about boxing is being able to, like, move and get out the way of being pummeled. And, yeah, so I don't know if you can... I've got a bit of a swollen nose today doing this pod, and my head is aching all around, and...
It's proper full-on sparring.
Proper full-on sparring, but this particular sparring I just thought was a bit mean, really, because it kind of pinned us on the spot, and I had this great big 6'3" lad just, you know, pummeling me basically, and I could just about reach his upper body, but he was kind of just pounding the back of my head from a great height.
Were you at any point tempted to just run away, or would that have resulted in a major loss of face?
I don't think Jock, who's the very East End trainer over there, would have appreciated that.
Is he like Mick in Rocky?
You wonder what goes on in his, you know, in his private life. Maybe you don't want to know what goes on, really, but all you know is he's Jock, and he's there, and he does bizarre training routines.
Well, go on, what else?
Well, introducing the tyre.
Because I know he has to catch chickens. We've
had
Creed.
We've had to punch this tyre as well, right, with just our wraps
chickens
on. Like,
Have you had to catch chickens?
We haven't had to catch chickens, no.
That'll be next week.
No, okay, maybe.
Have you run through the Urals or something like that? You know?
What?
Yeah, and right in when he goes to fight Dolph Lundgren in Moscow.
Right.
Yeah, and he's...
He runs through the Urals.
And runs through the Urals.
Yeah. What, all of them?
Well, I don't think all of them. I mean, that would be a Rocky-esque feat, wouldn't it?
There aren't many green areas around King's Cross for us to run through, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chelsea host Everton at the weekend. Everton had a 0-0 draw with Man City, while Chelsea also drew, but that was 2-2 against West Brom, who live up to their Chelsea bogey team reputation there. Chelsea still 6 games unbeaten, but that whole notion of getting into the top four look a little bit less likely than it was even before.
It's a bit of a step back for Chelsea. I think we saw the Chelsea we got used to under Mourinho this season against West Brom the other night. I think a big priority for Hiddink after that 2-2 draw against Watford was to restore the solidity that they had at the back. They'd recorded clean sheets in each of the last 3 games. And I guess West Brom, they looked a little bit vulnerable again. And I think all the hype about, you know, John Obi Mikel being the solution to some of their problems in midfield. Darren Fletcher, you know, had the run on him. He got bossed around by Rondon as well. And Pedro, who played so well against West Brom at the Hawthorns, was really disappointing. Hold off at half-time, gave the ball away. Costa, back to his back to the worst of Costa, just getting in lots of fights, scraps. Mm. Yeah, and when you consider that, I think Chelsea only had 2 shots on target to West Brom's 6. And this is a West Brom team that doesn't score a lot of goals.
No.
I think it was
very
unpulous.
Like they seemed to really set up for to go at Chelsea.
Yeah, no, they did. They had a lot of chances from set pieces, as you'd expect from Pulis' sides. But, you know, both of their goals came from open play, both from, you know, silly mistakes by Chelsea players, you know, giving the ball away too easy. And yeah, so I think it was a bit of a step back.
All right. Well, now they welcome Everton, who beat them. I don't even remember this. The 3-1 win back in August, wasn't it? And with that hat trick from Stephen Naismith, and also an absolute belter from Matic. What do you think?
Well, Everton played well against Man City. Mm. What we've come accustomed to with Everton is that they just can't defend. they give away too many goals, and if they'd been better at the back, they would probably be making a better fist of getting into the Champions League places. And they kept a clean sheet. Jagielka was back. Tim Howard was man of the match, even though I think there'd been a lot of criticism of him from some Everton fans, thinking that Robles, who'd been really good in the cup, should come in and play instead of him. So, you know, maybe with Jagielka back in defence, they can actually start going up the table, because obviously we're talking about Defoe going back to Spurs. Well, Lukaku will be going back to Chelsea. And again, he looked good against City. I was released by Deulofeu once, had a chance, and he picked out Osman, who almost scored a really beautiful volley. So, I think this could be a very difficult game for Chelsea. I wouldn't be surprised if Everton got something out of it.
Right, Lukaku to terrorise that Zuma-Terry partnership, or whoever it is at the back.
Presumably. Mm. I mean, he's having a great season. They're not. Weirdly, actually, just going back to the Everton game, Everton-Manchester City, that was the first scoreless draw at the Etihad since, I think, November 2010.
Wow.
Yeah.
First scoreless draw at home?
Wow. Yeah, as far as I know.
Since 2010?
Yes, and that game was against Birmingham City.
Wow. That's just astonishing.
So, yeah, not too many teams keep City scoreless at home, and it's surprising that Everton were one of them.
Will Palace, Barry, because that's who City play next.
They might. They're a very good team, although they did get beaten by Aston Villa. I don't think anyone saw that coming.
No.
Alan Pardew, weirdly, seemed almost pleased afterwards, because he was very, very respectful of Villa as an institution, and he doesn't want them to get relegated.
Hmm. All right. Palace haven't scored any goals in their last four games.
Right.
That's a concern.
It is, certainly.
Because they haven't got any strikers, isn't it? Mm. It's not helped by that.
Even if when they have strikers, no striker has scored for them. Well, from open play, they've had one goal from a striker, and that's been a penalty all season.
And Bolasie, they've struggled since he's been out. And Zaha's tried to do as best he can in terms of being creative and going forward, but hasn't been able to do it.
All right. Bournemouth had that problem with loads of strikers. They bought Benik Afobe. He came on in the game we talked about before, the 3-1 with West Ham. And also Lewis Graben re-signing. That was on Monday. They face Norwich next. And, of course, that's his former club. Arrugger, yes. Thanks for that, Claxon.
They're both leaking goals all over the shop at the moment as well. I think Bournemouth have conceded 5, Norwich 6, I think, the last two. Around that figure anyway. So that could go either way. Although Norwich away from home have been particularly poor. I think they've got the third worst
away record.
I know they won at Old Trafford. That was the big one, and they won away at Sunderland. But I'd give Bournemouth the edge in that one, just because Norwich have been so bad when they've travelled.
All right, Norwich are currently 5 points clear of the drop. Bournemouth 3 points clear of the drop. Swansea 1 point clear of the drop. They're going to be hosting Watford, who are up in 10th, but slipping a little bit.
On the subject of Norwich, Gary O'Neill is now going to be out for 3 games because he got sent off for an absolutely comically ludicrous foul on Ibrahim Afelle, which was just so unnecessary. You know, you wonder, what the hell was he thinking? But he'll have a few.
Afelle was basically wandering towards the side of the pitch.
I'm not sure he was even on the pitch.
I think he came steaming in from behind him and just completely took him out.
Manoeuvre. But not a bit of a rush of blood to the head, I think.
Mm. Is that all of the weekend's fixtures? Saints-West Brom? Saints-West Brom.
Saints got their first win in, was it 10 in all competitions?
You might be right.
Hang on, is that including Arsenal, though? They battered Arsenal 3 games ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Second, it was 1-0 winning 10 until yesterday.
All right, then.
I think.
Right. And Swansea-Watford? Mm. Alan Curtis, poor chap, since he's become permanent manager, they got that they got beaten by Oxford United, and then absolutely hammered at home to Sunderland. So that's a big game, the visit of the Hornets.
I think there's more upward momentum about Sunderland than there is Swansea.
Right. What, ask producer Ben, what's more scary, a swan or a hornet? I'm going to go hornet.
A hornet, I'd say. I've been in a tent with a hornet.
Have you? That's not a good scenario.
That wasn't much fun.
How long were you in the tent
Huge things. I thought it was like a hummingbird or something that was in there.
I'd like to say I wouldn't like to be in a tent with a swan either. But you're more likely to avoid getting into a tent with a swan than you are with a hornet. That's the thing about hornets.
Well,
I'd
grab a swan, whereas I wouldn't want to go anywhere near that hornet.
I think you underestimate the power of a swan's neck.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you wrestle with a swan...
There's a family of swans that often swim up and down the canal behind the building. We could perhaps go and get one.
And practice. And
have an experiment.
Are you volunteering yourself?
No. Oh. No. Mm.
Sounds like one of your boxing routines.
But that could be the next one.
I don't know that we could do that. I bet it's something that only like the Queen and princes are allowed to do. Wrestle with swans. Swans are very much off limits to you and I in this wonderful democracy that we live in. Anyway, right. Let's take a break before, James, we get all up in that big Roma news and we talk about the FIFA Ballon d'Or, because we haven't even touched on that yet.
No.
Wow. I'll tell you after this. Now it's time to talk about what you've been waiting all this time to hear about. Charlton. James Horncastle. A lot of people tweeting in and texting in and saying, how can we save Charlton? What's to be done? What's the latest?
I suppose we could have a fundraiser of, you know,
What have they done? They've been in the news again this morning. It's breaking news.
Yeah, they've sacked their interim coach, Carol Frey.
And reappointed
Jose
a former
Riga.
Manager.
Jose Riga. Now, how many managers ago was he?
I think, was it 3 managers ago?
So that's what, like a month or so? Or?
No. I think it's back to 2014.
Right. Yeah. And where's he been in the meantime?
He was at Blackpool.
Oh, yeah. Did it go well there?
No, it didn't go well there.
Oh.
Lost a lot of games.
Did he win, like, one game in 15 or something?
Yeah, one in 15, yeah.
All right. Well, that's not good news. Then why have they brought him back, James?
Well, Charlton James, second bottom of the championship.
Right.
That makes them 23rd, if my maths correct. And they lost 5-0 at Huddersfield on Tuesday night. Huddersfield known as the dog botherers by league fans. And Captain Johnny Jackson said he'd...
Is it a boxing exercise?
No.
Oh. Why, then? Why?
I think it's the terriers, isn't it? So, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Captain Johnny Jackson said he'd make sure the 166 travelling fans would be reimbursed.
Oh, really?
How generous of him.
That's really nice.
In that same post-match interview, didn't he also say that Frey should be sacked before Frey had been sacked? He said a change needs to be made.
Wow.
And which would have been interesting had he not been sacked.
Yeah, well, it's funny to talk about players urging the managers to be sacked, which still rarely happens, but it happened only the other day, of course, with Palermo, who have now gone ahead and sacked Ballardini again.
Mm. No? And they did bring back Iacchini.
Yes. So, because we touched on this, I think, last week, or maybe we didn't, that whole Palermo thing. I think we didn't in the end. But Palermo, who had fired Iacchini back in November after he'd won a game, 3-1.
Yeah, we said he would be back.
And we said he'd be back. But then they couldn't get hold of him, or he said he didn't want to come back when they decided to fire the man who they'd replaced him with. And now?
They've sacked Ballardini.
Yes.
And I think Palermo, this is a record even for Zamperini, because he's sacked managers in the same season after both have won games.
Mm.
And what happened, Don, on Sunday was Ballardini was sacked, not really by Zamperini, but by his goalkeeper.
Right.
Stefano Sorrentino, who he'd clashed with in training. And Sorrentino came out after the win and said, oh, no, this isn't Ballardini's victory. You know, we won without a coach.
Mm.
He wasn't here before the game. He's not here after the game. He hasn't been in the dressing room. And so the thinking was that Iacchini was coming back. But now they've signed, was it Guillermo Barrios Schelotto, who used to play for Boca Juniors, championship manager favourite.
Hmm. Meanwhile, in an eerie parallel with the Charlton situation, Roma this week have also fired a manager and brought back one that they used to have. And I'm talking about Rudy Garcia, who got the bullet, and they brought back
Luciano Spalletti.
Streamlined and very handsome Luciano Spalletti, who bizarrely, despite the fact that he's a great coach and one of the innovators, the man who really repopularized the whole false nine thing, has been in the wilderness since, well, 18 months now or something.
Well, it's a golden wilderness.
A golden wilderness.
Because he was on gardening leave from Zenit, St. Petersburg, for so long, and he was earning such riches with them because he led them to a couple of Russian Premier League titles that no one could afford to buy out the contract that he had. He had golden handcuffs on, but no longer. So he's back at Roma. I think he's a better manager than he was when he was there in his first spell. He led them to three runners-up finishes, a couple of Coppa Italia, the last Roma coach to actually win anything with the club. And as you say, had them playing some of the best football on the continent at the time. I think if you're wondering why Manchester United or how they won the Champions League in 2008 playing a false nine, it's because, well, they played Roma when they were popularising that with Totti. And also I think it was something that, you know, Pep Guardiola saw and did with Messi. But I think Roma have got a lot of problems. They play in a semi-deserted stadium. The ultras are on strike because the Coversud was partitioned, and they don't feel that the club protected them from that. So I don't think the appointment Spalletti, though warmly received, will lead to crowds coming back anytime soon until they're departitioned, if you like. And a lot of holes in this team. They don't have a centre-back to play alongside Kostas Malas. They don't have a right-back. The players up front, the wingers, they're too selfish. Edin Dzeko hasn't scored hardly any goals. So I think he's got quite a lot to do with Spalletti, even though this team's capable of so much more than it's shown.
Yeah, but
this
when you look at that squad, I mean, you're being a little bit negative there. When you look at that squad, there's some great players there.
Well, Antonio Rudiger at centre-back.
Yeah, maybe not him so much, but Pjanic and Manolas is good at the back.
Well, I think one of the problems for Roma is that, and one of the problems for Garcia, which did for him, was that in the summer, it was a little bit like what happened at Liverpool with Brendan Rodgers, where basically his backroom staff was sacked and he was left. And he had a new fitness and conditioning team imposed on him. And justifiably so, because in the second half of last season, Roma ran out of gas completely. They could play a half of a game and that was it. But that hasn't changed, even with this new team. And Garcia, towards the end of his tenure, was basically saying, look, you know, I'm having to take players off at half time. Players are cramping up after 60 minutes. Spalletti's going to have to work with that team as well. So, again, that is a fault of the ownership. So, as I said, it's not a cure-all, is bringing Spalletti.
Okay. Well, his debut, his first match back on the Giallorossi bench will be at home to bottom of the table Verona, one of the few teams around Europe who have yet to record a single victory this season. So, you know, that could be an opportunity to get things underway in the right spirit. The team that they drew 1-1 with at the Stadio Olimpico will be featuring in our live game on Sunday night. Milan, they're taking on Fiorentina with their own manager, who looked equally at risk, Sinisa Mihalovic. His position reinforced by a fine cup win against Carpi in front of three people at the San Siro. So that's nice then. Fiorentina, who are, if in case you're wondering, still very much in the thick of their title bid and that whole title race. They are 3 points off the lead after their defeat at home to Lazio last weekend. Was it at home or was it at Stadio?
Yeah, it was at the Franchi.
At the Franchi, yeah. So the situation at the top, Napoli are top. 2 points behind them are Juventus with 9 straight wins under their belt and Inter. And then you've got Fiorentina a point behind them. Roma are currently 7 points off the lead. But, you know,
Who do you fellas think will win the Serie A this season?
The bookies are going with Juventus. I mean, they've won 9 in a row. And your head would say Juve. But I think heart says Napoli, because they've got the best player in the league in Higuain, 18 goals in 19 games, and they've played the best football so far this season. And they've got a great balance to this team. They can defend, keep goals out, and score goals at the other end.
Right. I know you're a big fan of newly promoted Sassuolo, Barry.
Well, you know, newly as in...
Yeah, recently. And, recently, you know, the last couple of years. Certainly in geological terms, it's right now. And
but a little note to add on Napoli, if they do win the title...
All right.
Nathaniel Chalobah who hasn't been starting because they've got a very good midfield, but he has been coming on for the last quarter of hour of games.
Mm. This is the Chelsea loanee.
Yeah. I think he'll become the first Englishman to win the Scudetto, if they do win it, since the 1920s when Genoa were winning it. So, I mean, it's one to keep an eye on for Chelsea fans.
I'll keep an eye on that. Just on that Sassuolo note, if you put the top six, their results against each other, the team with the best record is Sassuolo. And they're in 6th. So they're not that far. I mean, they're certainly in the mix for place in Europe, maybe even Champions League. That would be amazing. Milan, by the way, are behind them and Empoli all the way down in 8th. They're 10 points off Champions League.
Would that be more amazing than Leicester winning the league?
Yeah, I would say it would. And I would say that Di Francesco, you talk about Sarri being one of the great tacticians. I think Di Francesco, what he's done at Sassuolo has been unbelievable. Just because Leicester, they do have, even though in Premier League terms, they don't have the budget of Man City and Arsenal, etc. In European terms, they have huge spending power, and Sassuolo don't have big spending power in anybody's terms.
No,
and they have benefited from a very favourable relationship with Juve, I guess.
Yes, and their owner, Giorgio Squinzi, isn't short of the
ceramic tile king.
And I mean, they are going against the grain in many respects, in that they're the only team, if you like, aside from Juve, who put a lot of faith in young Italian players. They've got the best around in Berardi. They've just signed, with the help of Juventus, a player called Stefano Sensi, who's been talked about as the new Marco Verratti. So Di Francesco, I think, as you were saying, many people, if Roma had persisted with Garcia until the end of the season or brought in a caretaker, they might have gone for Di Francesco, because he, of course, won the Scudetto with them back in 2000.
Very brainy man. He looks a little bit like Jonathan Wilson. Do you not think?
Yeah, with the specs.
They have a similar thing going on. Similar thing. Obviously not as clever as the brain, but right. Excellent. All right, well, it'll be interesting to see how that all pans out. Of course, we'll have all the goals and that Sunday night. Boom. Let's finish off with the exciting Ballon d'Or, which took place on Monday. Shores of Lake Zurich.
How was it, Jimbo? Our man on the spot.
That's right. I was on the spot. I went out to Zurich on Monday, and many thanks to Max Rushton for coming in and taking care of business as I went out to the cold and windy streets of Zurich. The rain was teeming down, but it didn't dampen the ardour of the many fans who were there in their bobble hats with their Barcelona shirts and their Brazil flags. The public seemed to be very much in favour of the two Barcelona players who were on the short list for the Ballon d'Or, and it was quite exciting. Got to meet the big three.
What happened behind the scenes, Jimbo?
Well, it's very exciting because they have a players' lounge where all the nominees of the various awards, men's coach of the year, which two of the candidates didn't turn up for, Luis Enrique and Guardiola, Sampaoli was there. He didn't win, of course. Luis Enrique got it for winning 5 trophies in a year, which is kind of impressive. And your women's coach of the year, which Jill Ellis won, USA World Cup winners.
And she's from Portsmouth, apparently.
She's from Cowplain, just outside Portsmouth, but is not in a hurry to go back there. Right. She was there with her father and was waxing eloquent about how rubbish life was in Cowplain. He looked very miffed by this. He was still resonant. If you're in Cowplain, by the way, it was really the rain that put her off, not necessarily the locals or anything like that. Anyway, but she seemed a very, very nice person. And I met Mark Sampson as well, the chap who took England to their greatest World Cup success since 1966. So all of that, yes. And then the big three. So they get people into the players' lounge before, and there's lots of kind of people with walkie-talkies, and they're meant to turn up, and then they still haven't turned up, and they might be coming now, and then they might not be. Anyway, eventually they turn up, and two people kind of shuffle in their baggy jeans and stuff, and then in strides Cristiano Ronaldo, who's looking very much man on a mission. You know, whatever he's doing, he is a man on a mission. And they get sat down, and first of all, they explain that they're going to have this press talk, and that guy there, and I'm busy waving to them, is going to be hosting it, and there's some befuddled looks at this point. But anyway, we shake hands and all that. But then this long-haired, despectable Swiss type turns up and says that he wants to give them a little talk about the unfortunate news that's been going on, more or less, to quote him, in the last year at FIFA. So they all go, oh, yes. So he introduces a whiteboard presentation, like a nine-point list of what's going on. So we're getting through this, and you can imagine, like, the players are just sat there. I mean, Neymar and Messi are both giggling together. Ronaldo's sitting on the other sofa, and his foot is going up and down, tap, 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 tap. He's looking most put out. Anyway, eventually we get down to point eight. We think, okay, right, we'll move on. But no, another slide comes up with kind of a – we've got a flow chart of how the new governing body of FIFA is going to work. And then we have 5 minutes on that as well.
Why on earth did they think the boys would be interested in the new FIFA hierarchy?
I can only imagine that FIFA were so excited about their – completely comprehensive cleanup of the organisation, and also so concerned about people in the upcoming press tour asking questions about corruption that they wish to kind of basically make everything absolutely clear, which, you know, sadly I don't know if the players completely picked up on this. But anyway, after that they came out and they were all quite relaxed. Their mood improved enormously once we got on stage and had a little chat together. And yes, there was even a question about corruption, which Messi and Neymar both stared at their shoes. But Ronaldo again, bingo. I've not had the pleasure of meeting him before, but he's a very focused quite intense individual. And he does seem to be a man who's, you know, looking for challenges and then ready to embrace them. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if he gets into politics or sports politics or some form of governance. But anyway, he batted away the corruption question with ease.
Well, he said when he was asked about that at the time, that Blatter said he was going to stand down, didn't he say, he said, I don't give a shit about that. And I care more about, what was it, more about?
Was it like hair? Jewelry?
Yeah, more about something like hair or shampoo or something.
All right. Well, somebody's had a word with him since then.
So he's more focused on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, his statue got graffitied by Messi fans in Madeira this week, which his sister was very, very angry about.
Well, you would be, wouldn't you, really?
Yeah, a bit too angry, though, I think.
The one where he's standing to attention, that statue.
Yeah. Producer Ben wants to know if I met Mrs. Pogba. I didn't meet Mrs. Pogba, sadly.
Pogba's jacket was...
Yeah, actually, I think one of the biggest disappointments, I mean, probably the biggest disappointment of the whole Ballon d'Or, apart from me being the host of the press talks, was the fact that Messi wore a proper jacket for the...
Yeah, that's always disappointing. I like his crushed velvet maroon numbers, burgundy, sort of Bernard Manning
Sammy
type.
Sammy Leto had his...
Yeah, well, there were some spectacular... Never mind, though, because in terms of somebody wearing something really, truly bizarre that everyone was talking about afterwards, you'd have to go a long way to beat James Nesbitt.
his hair was incredible.
Whose hair was it, though?
I don't know, yeah.
You weren't tempted yourself, Jimbo?
Well, I don't know what... Does anybody know the backstory of that with Nesbitt? Because he wasn't with hair... a couple of weeks ago, or even a week ago, I think, on the Graham Norton show. And then suddenly, bingo, there he was, indulging in sparkling banter with Paul...
Kate Abdo.
I was going to call her Paul or Abdo. Kate Abdo. With this kind of... It looked like an old Sean Connery one that he maybe got left behind in Switzerland. Is he doing it for a film?
No, I believe he's had hair replacement therapy of some sort, of the kind sort of favoured by... cricket Shane Warne. As far as I know, he has previously been seen out in, I think, at the Groucho Club with a new sort of salt and pepper thatch.
Right.
So he's got
but now it's a different colour, so he's obviously dyed it.
Maybe he's on one of those, you know, you have 14 days and if you don't like it, you can... But when somebody we know did that, it was a very lengthy process before it resembled anything like a head of hair. Yeah. So I'm surprised that he was immediately able to... Anyway, not the most important question about the whole Ballon d'Or, but there you go. That brings us to an end, I think. Oh, and Messi won, of course.
I did.
Yeah.
Good.
Messi got his fifth Ballon d'Or, and nobody was terribly surprised given the year that he's had.
It didn't seem to be as tense between him and Ronaldo as usual.
I've not seen them together before, but on this occasion, even though there was very clearly a Barcelona sofa and a Real Madrid sofa, it all seemed quite... I mean, they seemed just getting on with it.
In the documentary, Messi comes out of it, a Ronaldo documentary, Messi comes out of it really well because he goes over and says hi to Ronaldo's boy. Mm. And I think Messi was introducing him to his missus in this one, wasn't he? Seemed all very cordial.
Yeah, it's all, you know, that's the power of football, isn't it? Bringing people together. A handshake. Sepp always said, a handshake. Bingo. Anyway, that's it, listeners. That's enough of the suggested power of words for this Thursday. We'll be back on Monday. I can only hope you'll be having a good weekend between now and then, and that you will choose to join us for what will be Football Weekly. For now, it's many thanks to producer Ben, to Barry, to James, and to Greg. Oh, and if you want to know how the Hateful Eight is, you can always check out a brief 3-minute little roundup in which I say that I quite liked it, and loads of people respond, we didn't. Anyway, speak to you soon.